between games here at the game table. And before we get into the next one, it's discussion time. This is Table Topics, where we read stories from Reddit having to do with situations in the tabletop world. We will react, discuss, and give our opinions on the chosen topics for you to enjoy and possibly take back to your gaming table. I'm your host, Kaylee, and my guest today is Ashley.
Hello.
Today's topic is money and investment. So let's get into it. So, as with any hobby, to participate in it, you must have said materials, which for board games is the games themselves.
Yep.
So there's monetary decisions involved with that. You have any initial takes on buying into board games?
And in general, money can be a hot topic of conversation amongst people. So I'm curious just where some of these stories go today. But in general, when it comes to money and board games specifically, I don't even like to think about that. I don't even want to know how much money we spent on board games.
Well, we're definitely going to think about it.
Yep.
For the next hour or so.
Yep.
Yeah, choosing which games to buy and invest in. And then obviously with board games, sometimes choosing where to buy them is also a decision to be made. But we're going to look at some examples and what some people factor in to those decisions.
I'm excited.
Okay. The first story comes from r/relationship advice. Username, okay. Title says, my boyfriend, 34 male, buys me, 27 female, board games, but refuses to play any with me. I love board games. I've been trying to come up with ways to spend more quality time with my boyfriend, as we only really watch TV and play video games, and there's a small bookshelf in our home overfilled with board games. Whenever I mention them or ask if he'll play one with me, he'll always say yes, but he sounds annoyed. I end up not pushing it, and we never end up playing. I asked him why he buys me board games as gifts if we aren't going to play them. He says it's so that we have them? I responded, what's the point of having them if all they do is collect dust? And he replied that the collection looks nice on the shelf. He says he doesn't enjoy them, and when I try to push it and get him to play, he says, I don't make you do things you don't want to do. I'm upset, but I can't tell if I should be, so I figured I could use some other points of view. Let me know if any other info would help.
I mean, neither one of them is wrong.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be forced to do something that I don't want to do, but why have board games if you're not going to play them?
Yeah, I think the collection looks nice on the shelf.
A little
argument is a little off. And I say that as someone who's very susceptible to collecting. But no, I mean, it's a social activity. It's a game. You're literally supposed to play it. And this speaks a little bit to attitudes as well. Of, you know, she's asking you to do something and immediately having an attitude about it is not ideal. And spending money on board games just for them to sit is way not ideal. So.
Yeah, I relate in a sense that quality time is definitely one of my like top love languages. Like I love a good quality time, whether it's with my husband, friends, family. I love just time spent together. And you can tell that that's what she's looking for. She just wants time to connect with her husband, and she enjoys board games, so thinks that it's something that they can do together and enjoy doing together, which is really cool. But with him not enjoying it so much, maybe they just need to find something that they enjoy doing together that's in a different vein, and maybe that means not allocating the money in that capacity. Or if he wants to buy board games for her and spend that money on a hobby to support her, maybe she just needs to find some other people that she can go have game nights with every now and again.
Yeah. I'm wondering if she shouldn't push a little bit once or twice to get him to actually play something.
Yeah.
Because if they do play video games together, they probably have a certain dynamic of teamwork or, you know, like enjoying entertainment, because I think couples use board games as a way to, like you said, facilitate time together, facilitate quality time. So I would be surprised if there's something about their dynamic that makes him not enjoy board games. Like, it sounds more like maybe it's just something he pushes back on out of principle, but if she got him to try it a few times, maybe he would recognize that it's an entertainment.
Yeah, maybe it's asking why he doesn't enjoy playing board games, and like you said, finding something that's more in the niche of the vein of something that he would enjoy. Maybe they need to only play cooperative games and like Pandemic Legacy or things of that nature, that they're working together to solve a problem and not something where they're going against one another.
So the top comment is a follow-up question, which OP responds to. This is from Precious Roy. Is he bad at board games? Are they competitive or cooperative? OP says, we've played a mix of both, and he does seem to like cooperative better. I don't think he's bad at them, but when we play one for the first time, I take to it quicker and normally win. If it's a game we both know and have played before, it's a toss-up. I would think that if I tallied up total wins across our relationship, I'd have more, but that's probably because we have so many games and getting him to play is such a pain, so we're almost always playing a game for the first time.
Just with that last comment there, getting him to play sounds like a pain. It's almost like she feels like it's a chore to get him to play, and he also feels like it's a chore to play.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer, because it could be fun.
I'm wondering if I'm reading into this as well, too, but it seems like she's saying, the first time we play it, I usually win. And the first time we play it, there's such a pain. So there's a potential that he doesn't like having to learn new rules, learning the rules teach and going through that process. There's a potential he doesn't like losing. But, you know, this comment, if it's a game we both know and have played before, it's a toss up. So maybe you need to make a conscious effort to replay games that he's already exposed to, and you'll have better luck.
Yeah, maybe ask him which games he really enjoys and try to find games that are similar to that game. So maybe similar mechanics or a similar vibe, similar storyline, just something that will make it a little bit more fun for him or easier to digest if it's something that he's familiar with. Because I relate to the sense that I don't always love to play new games either. I have to be in the right frame of mind.
Yeah.
And everyone learns rules to games differently. And especially if it's a really, really heavy rule game where you have to spend an hour reading the instruction manual before you can even play the game, you definitely have to be in the right frame of mind to be able to sit down and do that. You can't just do that any random night. You have to be there mentally.
Yeah, for sure. Nate often jokes that whenever we're playing a game, I win the first time, always. But by the second or third time, he's the threat, which is 100% true. Or like, at least it's mostly true that I tend to win initially, and then I'm occasionally destroyed in later games. So maybe there's that part of the dynamic that you just have to get over, or you just have to find games that are in his interest, or I don't know, something about the speed that they play or how fast you can learn them or something. There's got to be something here that can work, because clearly he loves you enough that he's showing a love to buy this for you and to support you in this way. and maybe his love languages do align more with gifting. But there's finding a way to make that translate to actually doing this with you would be really good for your relationship, it sounds like.
Definitely. Also sounds like he enjoys video games. Did it say that?
Yeah.
Maybe they start with playing a game on an online platform.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Play a game on the computer or find a game on the Nintendo Switch or Xbox or something that is similar to a board game. Maybe that could be a way to get him a little bit more into the idea.
That's true. And I see posts about this a lot. People getting exposed to games like Monopoly or Catan, which like, okay,
yeah.
I get it. Being exposed to those is common for most of us, but I see these posts of people who build up their comfort level with these more quote unquote complicated games through that type of platform.
Of course.
Before they do it with an investment in an actual box or before they have to go play with friends or whatever. And it ends up really helping that transition. And we've talked about before that some people's hesitancy with board games is that sense of insecurity of like, can I play this? Can I figure this out fast enough? And that could really, that's a really great suggestion because that could absolutely help with that.
Yeah, that could be interesting because then he could learn how to play the games on his own in his own time and find ones that he enjoys and then bring that into their relationship.
Yeah. Especially if he finds, you know, mechanics that he enjoys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This comment is from, let me help you out. Says, I mean, yeah, it sounds like an annoying situation. I get him not liking board games and buying them for you so you can play with other friends who enjoy them. But counterpoint, it's normal to have activities that your partner enjoys more than you do. And it's courteous to indulge them occasionally by doing those activities with them in order to make them happy. Boyfriend sounds like a bit of a pill. OP responds, I don't even think he's getting me the game so that I can play with friends because honestly, I don't have any friends that I could play them with. That's such a common indicator or like a common statement that I'm seeing on stories is like, I don't have anyone to play with. That's kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Someone responds to her and says, try to make some. I love playing board games and I got into it because of a friend. My parents didn't really like playing, so I focused on playing with friends. After moving out, I actually made more friends to play with. The husband of my friend that got me into playing enjoys some from time to time, but he doesn't enjoy all types of games. Maybe sit down with your partner, go through all your games, and have him point out the games he likes the most.
Mm-hmm.
Ask him if he's willing to play one evening a month or something like that. Make it clear that the reason you're asking is the want for more quality time, not necessarily the games. If he really dislikes games that much, don't force it. Find something else to spend quality time together.
I really love that comment in both facets, both the whole idea of finding ways to spend quality time together, whether it is scheduling it out, maybe it is putting a limit on it to where it is. He knows that it is only going to be once a month or something of that nature that you guys can both come to the same page and an agreement on. And but also in the first half of that comment where it talks about maybe find some other friends who you can play board games with. I mean, in general, that's the whole reason that I'm here today doing this podcast with you is because we moved to Nashville and we didn't have a ton of friends that wanted to play board games with us. And my husband got interested in the Game Table podcast and started to reach out to that community and became friends, Jared and Ian. And that's why I'm here today. So I love that idea of widening her horizons and widening her friend group and giving her a little bit of an outlet, maybe outside of her relationship, to play games as well.
Yeah, that's very true. It was somewhat the opposite of me.
Yeah.
Because I moved into the board game community when I came to Nashville. I knew very much what I was getting into. But it's been exciting to see how much it's become a part of my life. Like going to the upcoming Fun K-Town convention is going to be my first convention, and it's board game based, and coming into doing this and talking about games and these relationships involved in it. And like meeting you and Derek, like it's been great that game nights are a thing where we could meet people mm-hmm. and make friends and move on that way. And like I met you at the game retreat, and a couple months later was like, hey, so listen,
crazy idea,
is there any chance that you like Reddit stories? And you're like, yeah. And you know, and that makes it work. That connection continues to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope she figures it out.
I hope so too.
Because it is sad to have a beautiful collection that
I know
isn't
never gets
played.
Touched.
Well, this next one is definitely for the collectors, because we talked about how there's different sources to get board games.
Mm-hmm.
One of which is Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Because you can support lesser known producers or people making their first game and see how that goes. But there's some quirks to Kickstarter games, and this covers one of them. This comes from r/boardgames. It's from Winnie the Eeyore. Title is Irked, with expansions coming out for brand new games and Kickstarted games. I was looking at a Kickstarter yesterday for a game from a new company. This is their first game ever. They are releasing the game with optional 5 separate expansions. One is an expansion for 5 to 6 players. The other 4 are content for the core game. This is like day one DLCs for video games. Yes, I know I don't have to buy them. They are optional. I just feel like I am not getting the whole experience of the game from buying the core box. I just think it's in bad taste. I am beginning to think features are being stripped out just to upsell them at the same or future time. Maybe I'm being conspiratorial. Maybe it is a business decision to make the core game more affordable. I'm not sure. It just pushes me away from the game. I don't want to buy the high tier to get everything, but I don't want to miss out. You know, FOMO. I was going to kickstart it until I saw that. I just decided to pass. Does anyone else feel the same? Am I off base in just being too sensitive?
That's an interesting conspiracy theory. I hope that people aren't putting games out there on Kickstarter without the core elements of the game being included in the main game. I guess I've always viewed expansions as an extra bonus. If you become super familiar with a game and really love it, expansions are a way to add another level to that game, whether it is extra players or different pieces or different strategies. So I've never really viewed it that way. And the whole idea of Kickstarter in general, I just find really cool because, like mentioned in the post, it gives people who aren't those like big game producers the opportunity to get their game out there in a way that helps them also get the financial backing to be able to produce these games too. So I think that's really, really cool.
Yeah, I'm relatively new to Kickstarter and especially Kickstarter board games. And even in the limited time that I've been on there, I can see what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was first getting into video games as well, learning a little bit about DLCs and sort of the politics of them and the irritation and that kind of thing. So I get what he's saying, and I'm definitely thinking about different listings that I've been on. I'm debating if I'm going to name them. There are some that there's like 5 different expansion versions that you can do. I was just telling you about one I bought for Nate. The surprise, I can't name it. But it's based off an existing, not technically a board game, but barely a board game. And what they did in theirs was the expansions were based on different individual pieces from this original game.
Yeah.
Like the expansion for a piece that's kind of fighter based was a more like cutthroat action version. And then there was a piece that's more defense based, and it was a very defense based expansion. And mm-hmm. then there's one that's more for intrigue based on this other different game piece. And I thought that was pretty cool. And I ended up, because I know it was going to be a gift, I ended up splurging a little bit higher on that. Well, also mainly because I didn't know which of those expansions Nate would be most attracted to.
Yeah.
So that one didn't offend me. But I can see that being a common irritation, especially if it's like an expansion that feels very natural to the game initially.
Mm-hmm.
Then yeah, why isn't it just part of it? Like, why isn't the standard just $5 more and that comes with it? Like, why are we making it part of this tier situation?
As the consumer, I understand that completely and would have the same mindset, but as someone who is a business owner as well, I also understand that mindset too, because if I were to guess, they're looking at it of the mindset of, I want to offer multiple levels for people that are going to invest in this game. So if you're going to invest in this game at a higher dollar amount, you should receive either a larger package or a larger expansion or cooler pieces. So I understand why they do that, with their whole goal being raising money. But I understand as the consumer, and I've been there too. Like you said, you see the highest package and you're like, well, I'm just going to splurge here on Kickstarter because I want those acrylic pieces. I want that expansion.
I guess there is, like, it does prey on FOMO a little bit.
It does.
You're like, oh, well, I could just get the $20 base game and move on.
Yep.
But what if this expansion is so good and I don't have it? Like, I get that. Like, me, for example, I will name this one. I backed a game called Fame and Fable because, one, it looked right up my alley for like fantasy kind of battle thing, but also it started from the idea of an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And as the Game Table podcast gets to know me, you'll know that I am a sucker for art. And just the style is very, very medieval drawings in the margins of textbooks, but in like bright neon.
Very cool.
Like colors. It's just this really cool marriage of two different art styles, and it looked so cool. And from what I remember from when I was looking at the Kickstarter, he didn't have tiers that were like a bunch of different expansions. Like, I think there might have been an expansion tier, but his really high tier for it was like an exorbitant increase in cost.
Yeah.
But it said you'll get your own, you get to design your own character or monster or whatever that goes into this game.
Yep.
And I remember after I backed it, I have thought about several times since being like, oh, but it would have been so cool if I would have had my own character. Like, ah, oh, you know, I'll have ideas like, ah, oh, I could have been this shadow sorceress, like, and not think about it. And that kind of upsell is so exciting to me. So I think that's 100% valid, and that like leans into this art idea, this creativity idea, and the FOMO practice of having these greater tiers. So, I mean, I think this guy's on to something,
mm-hmm.
but what are you gonna do?
I mean, yeah, I relate to everything that you said right there. Just the whole idea, me too, coming from a creative background, like, I appreciate a good game, like visual game.
Yeah.
So that suckers me in. And a lot of times the Kickstarter upgrades are cooler looking pieces or more sturdy pieces,
mm-hmm.
Which obviously costs them more to make, which is why you have to pay more for it. But yeah, I'm in alignment there. I've suckered into it. And I have found myself, like you said, when if you don't splurge and you buy the base game, I have found myself in some situations being like, man, I regret that. Now I can't get those pieces because they're not available anymore.
I know. I discovered Flamecraft late to the game, so I was nowhere close to hitting the Kickstarter for Flamecraft. But when I realized that I loved it,
yeah,
I was like, somebody's got to be selling these Kickstarter eBay. Like, I got to be getting it. Yes, eBay was one of them. One of the places I looked, and ended up finding someone who had probably just bought the biggest tier to get the expansions and then didn't want all the extra stuff of like the stickers and the pins and the art book and whatever. So I was like, yeah, I'll take all of that. Thank you so much. So, you know, yeah, you're probably onto something here that it is a little bit manipulative.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of an upsell. But, you know, they're developers. Ultimately, it's a business. And, you know, if it puts you off, that's okay.
Yeah.
Because there's a plenty of others on there that don't do that. So.
Yeah. The unique thing about Kickstarter, too, is that you're backing it with the assumption that they're going to be fully funded enough to actually execute. I'm not as familiar with it because I know my husband usually does it, but Is it that if it doesn't get fully backed, you get your money back? Is that correct?
You're not charged unless it's fully backed. But most of the board game ones that I've seen, this is not a huge pool, are way past being backed by the time I see them. Like, their goal might be 10K and they're already at 85. Like,
so it's getting there.
It gets there, yeah. So I've never had that experience of one not being backed.
So one of my husband's really good friends, and he's actually someone that I went to college with as well, did a game on Kickstarter. It was a card game called Card Bard.
Okay.
And the first time that they did it, I don't believe it was successful from a backing standpoint, but then the second time that they did it, it was. So having that personal experience of seeing a friend be able to take a stab at creating his own game, they drew all the artwork themselves. It was so cool just to see the behind the scenes of that process, and knowing that Kickstarter was what helped make that successful for them and what helped make it actually go into print and go into production. It was just really cool to see that behind the scenes part of it as well. So I'm a supporter of Kickstarter. I enjoy it, and I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I think there is an emotional aspect to Kickstarter, which is maybe why this works so well, because when you read someone's story and about why they want to do it, the emotional girly in me wants to be like, oh
yeah, yeah.
Yes, of course, I'll help you. But, you know, you do have to ultimately make the monetary choice of, does this actually seem like a game I would really enjoy and play? Or am I just getting suckered into this idea?
That choice comes often in this hobby.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it goes back to the collection, and a lot of what I see on r/board games is, well, this looks good on my shelf.
Yeah.
But I never play it, you know. Oh, well. We'll go to the top comment. I certainly agree. There's times it's overdone or just for the sake of upping the price without upping the price. But sometimes this is done because they had all the content planned, but the cost of the game would be too high to reasonably sell. So they cut content from the base game to throw it into an expansion, so the game is still affordable without sacrificing their vision for the game entirely. So, it depends for me.
Don't love that.
You don't love that.
Wait, so they were saying that the base game, part of the base game was taken out and put into an expansion?
Yes, that is what they're saying. They're saying it's like, maybe if this part of the game was in it, it would take it from a $30 game to a $50 game. Mm. So they took part of it back out and made it this expansion, so the regular game was more accessible.
Yeah, I don't like that, because I think that that goes back to what the original poster was saying, in a sense that they're removing quality or core strategy of the game just to upsell someone.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there's a response to that that says, yeah, so long as the base game is solid and doesn't require one of those additions to fix its gameplay, I agree. Games that separate out crucial parts of the base game are not justified.
That is what I was trying to say, but much better articulated.
No, I think that's a really good point too. And I think in this hobby, in this topic on this hobby specifically, there are people who are not going to shy away from a $100 game.
Yeah.
Let alone a $50 game. Like, if it's something that makes it work, it's okay. It's okay to charge for it. You know, not everything can be the most accessible on Target shelves, and that's okay because there's different audience.
That's very true. Just the theme alone of a game could create such a unique niche audience for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is some jaded responses here. Expansions are development scraps packaged up and sold at a higher margin. They might be balanced or reasonably fun, but they are almost never essential to the game. These scraps are usually cut because they add excessive rules, overhead, or playtime. Which is a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Another response says, sometimes the reason is also shipping costs or customs, i.e. if the package is of a certain size, weight, and price, it can get the optimal shipping and customs.
Mm-hmm.
Then you add an expansion for 5 to 6 players and bam, you'll have to rely on the more expensive shipping deal and customs will be charged.
Oh no. Yeah, that's
not
good.
That is a great point. That it could just be not about hitting a certain price range for accessibility, but for literally not getting into higher.
Yeah, I never thought about that.
Okay, this is another comment from Miffed Mouse. I wouldn't worry about features being stripped out. At least in the board game world, number of features does not have a strong correlation with the quality of the experience. The launching of expansions with games is clearly because it makes money. Players are encouraged to spend more, pushed on by FOMO. The best response is to just not buy the expansions. For most games, even many good games, the expansion content doesn't add much or can even make the game worse. Then again, don't buy Kickstarters at all. If the game is good, it will end up in retail. She is indeed a miffed mouse.
I mean, yeah, hot take. I do agree with that completely. It's like if you don't want to do Kickstarter, don't do Kickstarter. I think the excitement of Kickstarter is that you're backing something that is not out yet.
Yeah.
Like it could be the next hit game and you get to be on the back side of that. I think that's kind of what makes it fun is you're kind of.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good point is that if you know you only like base games, then just wait. Because I think for Kickstarter, generally the price tag is not different.
Mm-mm.
For the regular game, it's just to get these extra things and to be part of the creation process.
Yeah, and in general, when it comes to games, I don't know how you are, but like we don't ever buy the expansions to games unless it's a game that we really love to play or we really want to add. We really think it would be fun to add another player to this game. That's the only time that we're actually buying expansions outside of Kickstarter is when we really enjoy it.
That's definitely how I would be in regular game purchasing would be no. We get whatever comes in the box at the store. And then if we really like it, we'll get the expansions. Like, for example, I'm in the market for the Spirit Island expansions right now.
Yeah.
Because my good friend in Philly has already filtered it and said, these are the good ones and these are not the good ones. And then you'll be fine. And I now have new friends that want to play that game and like that game. And my husband and I like that game. So it's okay.
Yeah.
The expansions are fair game. But if it was something that's just a like, meh, I don't know that I would trust an expansion to make it better.
No, I agree with you completely. We definitely have some expansions that just sit on the shelf because.
There you go. And I also wanted the Flamecraft stuff to get the little like dragon figure.
Yeah, it's more fun
instead of just the little dragon meeples, though I do love the dragon meeples as well, but I wanted the little 3D. I got a thing.
Been there. Hey, I relate completely.
Okay, so we've talked about game development. in the conversation about Kickstarter. This story specifically concerns development and is from a game developer, and it's talking about how to split the income from that in a way. This comes from r/AITA. And it says, am I the problem for not sharing the income from a board game that I created, even though the person had a huge part in its development because he demanded payment up front? So, I love board games and a hobby of mine is to create my own games. I play my games with my family and friends. I'm very creative in terms of inventing games, but I'm not visually creative. I can't draw, paint, etc. My brother, on the other hand, is an amazing visual artist, both drawing by hand and digitally. When I first started making games, I had this fantasy that I was going to get rich. My brother was on board and did all the visual art. The assumption was split any earnings 50-50. We had some fun, but at the end of the day, all our games failed to find a publisher or sell. My brother got sick of all the work with no reward and stopped wanting to work on the games. I respected that, but I really thought one day I could make a successful game. I tried hiring a graphic designer for $60 an hour, but I just didn't have the same connection and we didn't get along. So I asked my brother if he would work with me if I paid him $60 per hour. He agreed. We made several more games together and he was totally disinterested in the sales aspect. From my point of view, I was hiring him to make my games. Anyway, I can't believe I'm typing this sentence, but my absolute favorite publisher agreed to publish my game. I invented the game and its rules, but my brother was integral to working out details, sharing his ideas, and creating an eye-catching design to get this published. I could not have done this without him. The thing is that all of his contributions were paid for by me at the rate of $60 per hour. So now we come to the obvious conflict. My brother wants a co-creator credit and half the money. We never discussed terms, but when we were working together without pay, we agreed everything was 50-50. But in my opinion, when he started requiring payment, he was my employee, and anything he did during that time was my property. The reason why I don't think it's fair to have to share with him is that I paid him literally thousands of dollars on projects that didn't yield money for me. So before he started requiring payment, I feel like we were both investing our time and skills, so the benefits were both of ours, although nothing ever sold. For him to start requiring money, for me, that seems like he didn't believe in me, and now that I sold the game, he wants back in. I absolutely admit that this game wouldn't exist without my brother's work and talent, but he got his compensation, and I don't plan on sharing ownership of the game with him. As you may expect, my brother complained to parents, grandparents, and aunts, uncles. Without exception, they all think I should share with my brother. That really made me second guess myself, since literally 100% of my family thinks I should share with my brother. Am I the problem? There's something about this whole thing that makes me upset. Like, my brother stopped believing in me. Am I selfish, or should I be able to keep all the money?
There are so many thoughts in my head with this story, and specifically, just to give a little bit of background, this story relates to both of us, I think, in a sense of what we both do for work. I am a freelance graphic designer, creative director, so a lot of aspects of this story hit home for me in a sense that I've learned throughout my time freelancing as a graphic designer, being an artist that, well, a couple of things. Firstly, you should never go into any sort of situation like that without a contract, even if it is your friends, your family, someone that you hold very dear to you. I've seen things like this ruin relationships between people. And I've also, unfortunately, been on the opposite end of that, where I've not received compensation that I deserved because someone just decided that they didn't want to pay me and I didn't have that contract there for my protection. So really, I think that's the first mistake that went wrong in all of this, was not having some sort of written agreement between the two of them when they started it. And then specifically when he decided to do work for a nominal fee, I think that's where that kind of veered off course a little bit. I understand his desire to want to be co-creator, because why would you not want to be in that situation if the game's gone successful? But I tend to lean towards her side. If he was doing work for her and handed it off, that is her property and she can do with it what she wants to.
Yeah, I think it was a mistake to not revise the contract to get some kind of contractor work agreement going mm-hmm. with this $60 thing. But I think you're 100% right. That I think if this was going up on Judge Judy,
yeah,
Judge Judy would look at the person and say, you got paid for your work.
Yep.
You got $60 an hour. Are you going to charge back that $60 an hour to ask for a percentage? Because I'll let you do that.
Yep.
But you've been paid in an employee-esque relationship. You now don't get to come with your hand out wanting this profit now that something has taken off.
Yep.
Because I think this poster does have emotions evolved into it. But even if you take the emotions out of it and you say, my brother got tired of working for free, so he had to start working for pay.
Understandable.
And the first several projects. Yeah. And he said, I respected that. And I offered him this amount. I tried with somebody else and we didn't click. So I came back to my brother. And we worked on several projects that didn't get anywhere. But he still made money because I was paying him $60 an hour. So presumably OP lost money on all these ventures that didn't get anywhere, but kept going.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have a game that's actually getting developed and published and making it. And you can't come back. If you came back and claimed 5% or said, hey, mm-hmm. can we put my name on it? Can we work something out? Like, I'd love the accolade or the title on my CV or something. Then that's a different conversation. But coming back out and saying, oh, we're still 50-50, right?
Yeah.
No. No, I'm sorry, you're not actually. Like, back off. That seems very moochy to me.
Totally.
I don't like it. And your family's wrong.
Yeah, to have that expectation, I feel like it's a little bit unreasonable. Now, there's no saying that he can't go. I think, well, firstly, I want to apologize. I don't think I caught, what was the gender of the original poster?
It doesn't say.
Okay. I don't know why I assumed female, male, whatever. But OP, in general, there's no saying that the brother cannot go back to OP and try to come up with some sort of mutual agreement, whether it is pitching. I mean, you can throw it out there. Say, hey, you can make back what you paid me for my graphic work. And then after that, if you need more help with the production, I can help you produce it 50-50 and we can take 50-50 profits.
Yeah.
There's no saying that there can't be further conversations or some sort of agreement that they can come to together. But it kind of sounds like they both have very intense opinions as to what direction they should each go, and that's really tough, and you hope that their relationship as family is stronger than the tension that this could create or cause a divide within their family.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, after you have your first game published, you're more likely to keep going.
Yeah.
So again, if it was a conversation to say, all right, well, let's going forward,
of course,
reevaluate the relationship again, then I've got no problem with that. Then you can think about it. And then this OP can decide. Well, then it becomes the emotional decision for the OP to say, either I let you back in or I don't.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you quit believing in me. But in either way, it's fine. It's fair game. But to say it like just because somebody finally hit big.
Yeah.
Now you want that. Now you want your comeuppance is not fair.
No, I mean, if you think about it in any other facet, like if this was a musician and they had this producer that was backing them, and then all of a sudden they're like, yeah, you're not going to hit it big. I'm going to dump you to the curb. And then all of a sudden they have a hit, and then they're going to come knocking back at their door. You're going to be like, heck no. Yeah. No, thank you.
No. What complicates this is the fact that their family and that this brother is the one that got the family involved. So who knows how the story was told? Just making it complicated for someone who's finally getting success.
That is very tough. You wish that in that moment your family could all celebrate that together and it not be a point of division.
Yeah. Just to have that sort of sullied by this is disappointing. The top comment is from Lively Sally, and it says, not the problem. You had the risk of sinking even more money into games that weren't successful. Your brother didn't want to take that risk and took an hourly pay job instead. He got his reimbursement for his work.
Ding, ding, ding. Agreed.
There it is. Very succinct in exactly the situation. Someone responds to there and says, OP, your entire family is agreeing with your brother because he's the one who complained to them. So he got to put his spin on it. I'm always telling people this, but fight back. Don't let someone else set the terms of the narrative. Tell them your side. Write it out. Include receipts. Then send an email to your entire family with the subject heading, my side of the story.
Getting petty.
Do it, OP. Not the problem. There was a lot of all caps in that comment.
I mean, that's like, I'm going to butcher this, but just the famous saying of there's always three sides to a story. One person's, the other person's, and the truth that's in the middle.
Yeah. Because again, like this idea of receipts, again, if it ended up in front of Judge Judy.
Yep.
I don't mind referencing her as much as possible, but she would say, all right, well, you do have deposit slips for these $60 hour like things, like in the, you know, one of them would produce deposit slips. She'd say like, great,
here you go,
this is, shake it at him. This is your compensation, you know, like it's as straightforward as that for me. That OP respected brother's wish of, I can't do this on faith anymore. Well, now a reward is coming on OP's faith. And they get it.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
And to hammer it into the ground more, I mean, they said that they just talked about this arrangement. There was no written contract. So that Judge Judy's throwing this right out the window.
Like, this whole 50-50 thing, out of there.
A verbal agreement is not the same as a written contract. Yeah. So technically, he is not entitled to anything. The brother's not entitled to anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's that clear. I don't see anyone disagreeing.
It's crazy.
And of course, the official ruling was not the problem.
That's good. I like that.
I kind of wish we knew what the game was, but I don't see it. I know.
That makes me want to go buy the game.
Okay. So we've looked at some of these different relationships with money. I found this on r/boardgames not that long ago. And I think it puts it into a dollar amount perspective for this. So this is from r/boardgames. It's from Xeno, X-Z-E-N-O. Title is, I've only spent $4,746.37. I was talking with a friend a few days ago, and we were comparing his comic collection to my board game collection, and we jokingly commented on the amount we've spent over the years. Well, my OCD kicked into high gear, and I used Board Game Geek's private info column to add the price I paid for all 100 plus games, at least all those I had records of. I've bought over the 12 plus years I've been in this hobby. I also included the dates I purchased them. I'd say under 5K in 12 years is perfectly fine, and I deserve a new game for my financial responsibility.
Why do I feel like my husband wrote this?
Derek, are you on Reddit?
Was that the end of it?
Yeah, that's the end of it.
Yeah. Like I said at the beginning of this episode, this is the whole thing that I do not like to think about.
Oh, no, you did warn me and I, oops.
Yeah. I mean, if you think board games typically cost anywhere from $30 to $100, And when you have over 100 board games, I'm going to have to go back after this and ask my husband what our number is now as to how many we have, because I know that he is also loves to keep track of all of it on Board Game Geek as well.
Well, let me know if it's 4,700.
Maybe I don't know if I want to know.
Okay. All right. That's fair too.
No, but I mean, it's one of those things where it's like you're investing in this, and if it's something that you enjoy and something that you're going to have for forever or until you decide to rotate your collection, I think it's worth the investment and the memories made along the way, getting that quality time with your significant other, with your family, with your friends. It makes me kind of crazy to think about that stuff, but in the vein, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Why, I think this is kind of a positive spin or a positive story to end on. Is one of my other hobbies with my husband is golf.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a set of clubs is already hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
And then to go play 18, two people with a cart is...
course fees?
I guess I only really know Philly prices, but it's from $70 to $100. Mm-hmm. So 12 years of golfing would be way more than $5,000.
Yeah.
I imagine.
Yeah.
I'm not going to just sit here and do the math, but I imagine. So $5,000 in 12 years for however many hours you're going out or you're spending on this hobby seems pretty reasonable to me. And that seems like, you know, this collection of 100 games feels like Jared's wall, Ian's wall, Derek's room. Like it feels like maybe the amount that feels a room like that. So it puts it into a nice perspective for me of like, oh, there is a dollar amount to this, but it can be manageable.
Mm-hmm.
Because especially if you find a game that you love, you don't necessarily need to buy a new one for a while. And then once you have a certain collection, your acquisitions are going to drop off because you've already got this collection that you can pull from. So I like it as a, like, I went and figured out how much I'd spent and it's actually okay.
Maybe that's our homework. We should each go back and figure out how many games we have in a ballpark. I'd be curious to know.
I will be done so much faster. I know. Because I admit, like, I don't have near as many as other people. I know that. But one thing I do that I don't know that other people do is I have a great love for really vintage looking games or like really old games. Like I have this really old Scrabble box that's just like almost like corduroy on the outside, and it's so beautiful. And then I have this really old collection of like specific card games, and I love just the aesthetic of these old games. And they're just decor. I'm not getting them out. I know better. We're going to play something new. We're not going to play the old thing, but it's nice to look at. And it gives me the vibe of like a vintage library or like the records, smoking room that people used to have a room to go and like ruminate on these things in game. And so that's my own different like susceptibility to money spent. But I understand why people end up with walls of games. I very much do. So.
Yeah, I love just this conversation and perspective in general, because if you think about it, if you're going out for a date night or a meal with your family, you're easily spending, by the time you get appetizers, a drink, dinner, you go see a movie. I mean, you're easily spending well over what a board game would cost. Yeah. So in a board game, you can have for forever.
Yeah, for years and play it over and over. Eat at home and play a board game, and that's a much more affordable date night or family get together, whatever.
So if you have a board game in your Amazon cart, I think we give you permission. Go ahead and buy it.
And this Xeno, guess what? You do deserve a new game.
Yes,
for your financial
you do.
Responsibility. I think that's the conclusion we're coming to.
I love it.
The top comment. That's less than $400 a year. As far as hobbies go, it doesn't get much cheaper than that, which was kind of my point. A response says board gaming continues to be one of the cheapest hobbies out there. The entry level is tiny. You can have a small collection and be entertained for months. There's no subscriptions to pay for. It's one of the few hobbies that you can continue to enjoy without ever spending another dollar on it. I guess technically true. I'd love to see that in practice. I'd love to see someone get three games and then say, I'm done forever.
No more.
Done forever. But yeah, that's the good point.
These people all have great points. Makes me feel better.
Oh gosh. You're not going to want me to read this comment because it's all numbers.
No.
Okay. Well, our listeners can jump on and find the comments here. But this person essentially breaks down their numbers since 1996 and says they've spent about $275 a year.
Oh, wow.
See?
That's not bad.
Oh, and OP responds to them and says, sounds like one more game won't hurt.
Nope. Will not.
Oh, geez. Oh, this is a funny comment, but not exactly about board games. There's a reason it's called Warhammer 40K.
That's funny.
Solid joke. Someone says, those are rookie numbers. I'm gonna need you to bump those numbers up.
That's really funny.
So, there is a cost to the hobby. There is money spent. With the occasional game that you get and you're disappointed in, it's a good investment.
Facebook Marketplace and buy a new one.
There you go. Absolutely. Well, those are our stories on today's table topic. Maybe you agree, maybe you disagree. Tell us about it. Maybe you have a story of your own you'd want to share. We'd love to bring it to the table. Check out our links in the show notes. Good luck on your next game, and we'll catch you again here on Table Topics.